Lily Fisher had taken a small house at Tuxedo for the autumn, and for a time, Lily joined her there. Following Mrs. Fisher's hints about marriage, Lily was hardly surprised to find that her fellow guest was Mr. Rosedale. Several other friends had been invited to dinner the first evening, and after they had departed, Lily made a move to retire to her room, and a few minutes later, her hostess joined her.
You know, Carrie, it's the first time since I came back from Europe that I found myself in a congenial atmosphere.
In spite of Mr. Rosedale.
You know perfectly well what I mean, Carrie. It's elegant and peaceful.
Ah, yes, it is peaceful. And for me, it's a well-earned rest. Louisa Bry is a stern taskmaster, I can tell you. Oh, by the way, I had a visit from Maddie Gormer the other day. She turned up last Sunday, and with, of all people, Bertha Dorset.
Really?
I was never more astonished.
As a matter of fact, before I left Long Island, I saw that Bertha was beginning to lay her toils for Maddie.
Well, she has her fast now. Bertha can already make her believe anything she pleases. And I'm afraid she's begun, my poor child, by insinuating horrors about you.
Oh, God.
Now, listen to me, Lily. You've told me so little that I can only guess at what's been happening. But there is something I do see, and it's this. If Bertha is still nasty enough to want to destroy you in the eyes of others, it must be because she's afraid of you. And Ned Silverton must fit into this. I can see that I'm right. Well, if you want to punish her, you hold the means in your hands.
I only want to clear my own reputation.
Well, you can't do that by sitting there thinking about it. You've got to act. You could marry George Dorset by telling what you know.
No,
well,
no.
If that's what you don't want to do, well, the only thing to save you is to marry someone else. My poor dear, you're tired. I must leave you. Rest as long as you like in the morning.
Lily lay awake for a long time pondering Mrs. Fisher's words. When she woke, she was surprised to find herself in a more than usually decisive mood. After lunch, Mr. Rosedale reminded her that she had engaged herself to walk with him to a nearby beauty spot. At this moment, the last person she wanted to think about was Lawrence Selden. But something about the landscape and the stillness of the day recalled the afternoon when she had climbed the slopes of Bellamont with him. As she strove to thrust aside this importunate memory, she realized that Rosedale was declaring his continued devotion.
Mr. Rosedale, when you last spoke to me in those terms, I said you must give me time. Well, you have given me time, and I have thought seriously about it. And now I am ready to marry you whenever you wish.
Miss Lilia.
For I suppose that is what you do wish.
Oh, my dear Miss Lilia, I'm sorry if there's been any little misapprehension between us. But you made me feel that my suit was so hopeless that I had really no intention of renewing it.
I see. I understand. Of course, I have only myself to blame if I gave you the impression that my decision was final. I think I will go back to the house now. But before we bid each other goodbye, I want at least to thank you for having once thought of me as you did.
Goodbye? Why do you talk of saying goodbye? Ain't we going to be good friends all the same?
What is your idea of being good friends? Making love to me without asking me to marry you?
Well, that's about the size of it, I suppose. I'm all broken up over you. I'm even more in love with you than I was this time last year. But I've got to face the fact that the situation has changed.
You mean that I am not as desirable a match as you thought me then?
Yes, that is what I do mean. Last year, I was wild to marry you and you wouldn't look at me. This year, well, you appear to be willing. Now, what has changed in the interval? Your situation, that's all. Then, you thought you could do better. Now...
You think you can?
Why, yes, I do. In one way, that is. It's... this way, you see. Why should I mind saying that I want to get into society? Man ain't ashamed to say he wants to own a racing stable or a picture gallery. Taste for society is just another kind of hobby. Perhaps I want to get even with some of the people who cold-shouldered me last year. Put it that way if it sounds better. Anyhow, I want to have the run of the best houses. And I know the quickest way to queer yourself with the right people is to be seen with the wrong ones.
You put it very clearly.
So, you see why I want to avoid mistakes.
I like you for telling me quite so honestly. And now, once more, I must say goodbye.
Bye, George. You're a dead game sport, you are. Now stop, Miss Lily. You know I don't believe those stories. I believe they were all got up by a woman who didn't hesitate to sacrifice you to her own convenience.
You are very kind, but I don't think we need to discuss the matter further.
I just want to put a plain case before you.
But you have just done so, Mr. Rosedale.
Not quite. The wonder to me is that you've waited so long to get even with that woman when you had the power to do so in your hands. Are you all right, Miss Lily?
I am. Just nothing.
Well, sit down again, do. Oh, I've upset you. There's one thing I must say, and then I'll be done.
I think we've both said enough.
Answer me this. Why don't you use those letters of hers you bought last year?
Letters? What do you mean?
Well, perhaps you've forgotten that I own the Benedict. I had to dismiss the Haffens because several of the tenants complained about them. And rather than be reported to the police, Mrs. Haffen admitted certain things to me. Look, Mrs. Dorset did you a beastly bad turn last spring. Everyone knows what Mrs. Dorset is. You could tell Dorset what you know. Well, it's not your style. But it's one thing to get Bertha into line. What you really need is to keep her there. And all the letters in the world won't do that for you as you are now. You know well enough that Bertha Dorset couldn't have touched you if there hadn't been... well, questions asked before, little points of interrogation. Bound to happen to a good-looking girl with stingy relatives, I suppose. The point is, Miss Lily, that without me, you'll simply be back among your old worries. And here I am, ready to take you out of them tomorrow, if you say so. Do you say so?
What you suggest is shameful. Bates.
Now, what's up?
You are mistaken, quite mistaken, both in the facts and what you infer from them.
Well, what's the matter? I thought we understood one another.
We do now.
So that's it. I might have known. It's because the letters are to him. Well, I'll be damned if I see what thanks you got from that quarter.
Sometime after her return to town, Lily put into execution a belated resolve to visit Gertrude Farish. As she climbed the dreary stairs to her friend's flat, she passed a middle-aged lady in black whose identity Gertie was eager to explain.
That was Miss Jane Silverton. Did you recognize her, Lily?
I thought she looked vaguely familiar. Isn't she Ned Silverton's aunt?
Yes, poor dear. She came to talk things over with me.
What sort of things? Is she in trouble?
Indeed, yes. She and her sister want to do something to support themselves.
Good heavens, surely they're not hard up.
They are. I'm afraid they have practically nothing left. And it seems they had high hopes for Ned when Bertha Dorset took him under her wing.
They must be very naive.
She talked quite beautifully to Miss Jane about regarding Ned as a younger brother and wanting to carry him off on the yacht so that he might drop cards and racing and take up his literary work again.
It's a touching picture.
You don't believe it?
Well, there were no horses on the yacht, of course. And I believe he and Bertha did read some poetry together. Tell me about Miss Silverton's ideas on ways of earning some money. It's a subject very dear to my heart.
Well, she thought that if I could find her something to do, she might earn enough to pay Ned's debts and send him away.
Has she any idea how long it would take her to pay for even one of Ned's evenings at cards?
I don't suppose she has. Do you know, Lily, he was horribly in debt when he came back from the cruise. I can't see why he should have spent more money than ever under Bertha's influence, can you?
My dear Gertie, I always understand how people can spend much more money, never how they can spend less. But how can these colorless, shrinking aunts support themselves, let alone their useless nephew?
Miss Jane reads aloud very nicely.
Really? And is anyone willing to be read to?
Oh, I think so. Some elderly people do. And Miss Anne paints quite nicely.
I feel more depressed every minute. Did you say you were going to make some tea?
Yes. I'll get some tea. Let me give you a cushion to lean against.
No, thanks. I don't want to lean back. I shall fall asleep if I do. I don't sleep at night, and in the afternoon a dreadful drowsiness creeps over me.
You don't sleep at night, Lily? Since when, Lily?
I don't know. I can't remember. If I don't keep awake now, I shall see horrors tonight. Perfect horrors.
They'll be worse if you drink too much tea.
Oh, no, preach, please.
Of course not. I didn't mean to preach.
Forgive me, Gertie, but I'm so tired.
I understand. But I'm worried. I'm sure you must be ill.
Ill? Do I look ill? Does my face show it? You stupid dear, why do you say such odious things to me? It's enough to make one ill to be told one looks so. And looking ill means looking ugly.
Of course it doesn't, Lily. You could never look ugly.
Look me straight in the face, Gertie, and tell me, do I look perfectly frightful?
You look perfectly beautiful now, Lily. Eyes are shining, and your cheeks have grown so pink.
Why don't you tell me frankly that I'm a wreck? Look, in the morning, I can see the lines coming in my face. Every sleepless night brings a new line. How can I sleep when I have such dreadful things to think about?
Dreadful things? What things?
Poverty, for one. I don't know any that's more dreadful. You asked me just now if I could understand why Ned Silverton spent so much money. Of course I understand. You think we live on the rich rather than with them. So we do, in a sense. But it's a privilege we have to pay for. We eat their dinners, drink their wine, smoke their cigarettes, use their carriages and their opera boxes. But there's a tax to pay on every one of these luxuries. Oh.
I hope you're not going anywhere tonight, Lily. I do think you ought to rest.
It doesn't sound very amusing, does it? I'm sick to death of it. And yet the thought of giving it all up nearly kills me. I must go, Gertie. Don't think too much of the nonsense I've been talking. I have an appointment with Carrie Fisher, who has promised to find someone who wants a kind of social secretary.
You mean as a job for you?
Yes. Well, dear Carrie, in her way, is as generous as you are. Oh. You know she makes a specialty of the helpless rich, and they're more in my line than reading aloud to the elderly.
2 weeks later, Gertrude communicated her fears about Lily to her cousin, Lawrence Selden, when he presented himself on a Sunday afternoon and lingered after the last visitor had gone.
I'm glad you stayed on, Lawrence.
I felt there was something worrying you.
How lately have you seen Lily?
Miss Blart, I haven't seen her at all.
Not at all, Lawrence. Why is that? I thought that you and she...
Well, I perpetually miss seeing her since she came back.
How do you mean? Have you tried to see her?
I've wanted to see her.
Well?
She seems to have been absorbed by the Gormer set since her return from Europe.
Oh, but that is all the more reason. She's been very unhappy.
Unhappy at being with the Gormers?
Well, that was in the way of a job. But that is at an end, I think. You know, Lawrence, people have been very unkind since Bertha Doris had quarreled with her.
Yes, I do know.
Well, then, couldn't you help her?
What are you thinking of, you incorrigible missionary?
I'm thinking of the fact that you and she used to be great friends, that she used to care immensely for what you thought of her, and that if she takes your staying away as a sign of what you think now, then I can imagine it maybe adding a great deal to her unhappiness.
My dear child, don't add to it still more by attributing to her all your own susceptibilities.
Lawrence, that is cruel. Lily is very sensitive.
Though you immensely exaggerate the importance of anything I can do for Miss Blart, you cannot exaggerate my readiness to do it, if you ask me.
I do ask you, then. I ask you because she once told me that you had been a help to her, and because she needs your help now more than she's ever needed it before. Oh, you know how dependent she's always been on luxury, how she has hated everything shabby and ugly. Now all those things have been taken from her. I can't help her myself. She's passed out of my reach. And I think she's afraid of being a burden to me. I don't want to force myself upon her.
I never heard you so eloquent, Gertie.
And I've never known you to be cruel. What is the matter with you?
Why do you call me cruel?
Oh, it seems to me that if someone could reach out a hand to her, someone like you, show her how much is left for her, which I believe you can do. Oh, I'm sorry, Lawrence.
Oh, Gertie.
Since you've learnt the wisdom of waiting, I don't see why you urge me to rush in. Still, I'll do as you wish. And I won't hold you responsible if I fail.
His cousin's words had made Selden feel how impossible it was for him ever to live quietly with the thought of Lily Bart. Though he betrayed little emotion when Gertie appealed to him, as soon as he reached the street, he turned his steps directly towards Lily's hotel, only to learn that she had moved away. The desk clerk, however, gave him her new address. Care of Mrs. Norma Hatch, the Emporium Hotel.
How did you find me? And forgive me for asking, but what made you want to?
Why should I have come unless I thought I might be of use to you?
Is that your idea of the basis of our friendship?
It's my only excuse for imagining you could want me.
Then you have come now because you think you can be of use to me?
Yes, in the modest capacity of a person to talk things over with.
I see. And not because you felt it would be nice to see me.
I do want to help.
It's very good of you to present yourself in that capacity, but what makes you think that I have anything particular to talk to you about?
Gertie told me you were acting as a private secretary, and I know she was anxious to hear how you were getting on.
Why did she not look me up herself, then?
Because she was afraid of being importunate. You hadn't sent her your new address. You see, no such scruples restrain me, but then I haven't as much to risk if I incur your displeasure.
You haven't incurred it yet, but I have an idea that you are very soon going to.
That rests with you, doesn't it? You see, my initiative doesn't go beyond putting myself at your disposal.
So, you are at my disposal. And what am I to do with you?
You are to let me take you away from here.
And may I ask where you mean me to go?
Back to Gertie in the first place, if you will. The essential thing is that you should be away from here.
Have you any idea of how arrogant your attitude is?
Arrogant? In what way?
To neglect me, even to avoid me at a time when I had most need of friends. Then suddenly to break into my life with this assumption of authority. You don't consider that arrogant?
Lily, don't you understand? I only want to help.
I'm very much obliged to you for taking such an interest in my plans, but I am quite contented where I am, and I have no intention of leaving.
That simply means you don't know where you are.
If you come here to say disagreeable things about Mrs. Hatch, I won't listen. She has helped me to earn a living when my friends were quite resigned to see me starve.
Nonsense. Starvation is not the only alternative. You can always find a home with Gertie until you're independent again.
I shall never be independent again.
What do you mean?
Since you show such an acquaintance of my affairs, I suppose you mean until my aunt's legacy is paid.
Yes, I do mean that. Gertie told me of it.
What Gertie does not know is that I owe every penny of that legacy.
Good God.
Every penny. And more, too. You now perhaps see why I prefer to remain with Mrs. Hatch rather than take advantage of Gertie's kindness. I have no money left, except my small income, and I must earn something to keep myself alive.
But with your income, even if it is small, you and she could surely contrive a life together which would put you beyond the need of having to support yourself. Gertie, I know, is eager to make such an arrangement and would be quite happy in it.
But I should not be. There are many reasons why it would not be kind to Gertie, nor wise for myself.
Now, I have no claim to know your reasons, but I believe I have a right to point out that you have placed yourself in a false position.
I don't know why you imagine me to be in a false position.
Is it possible that you are ignorant of Mrs. Hatch's reputation?
I don't think we need discuss the matter any further.
Lawrence Selden had not guessed that Lily had felt his long absence as the most bitter aspect of the last months. His desertion had wounded sensibilities far below the surface of her pride and determined her not to drop her defenses. The situation between them was one which could have been cleared up only by a sudden explosion of feeling, and their whole training and habit of mind were against the chances of such an explosion. And so they parted, with coldness on both sides.
Tell me about Mrs. Hatch. Is she nice?
Nice is a strange adjective to apply to Mrs. Norma Hatch. I've never heard of the Emporium before, but Lawrence seemed to think that it was a dreadful place and that Mrs. Hatch had a bad reputation.
I'm surprised he could bring himself to cross the threshold.
Oh, dear Lily, you know how concerned he is about you.
You surprise me.
But tell me about the work. I understood you were to act as a secretary.
My duties in that direction are rather restricted by the fact that, so far as I can see, Mrs. Hatch seems to know hardly anyone to write to.
Poor Lily.
I shall have to leave, of course. There's nothing wrong with Mrs. Hatch, you know, Gertie. Her offences are against taste rather than conduct. She has a wandering and extravagant good nature. Her laxities make the Gormer group seem a model of regularity and convention. At times, the thought of launching such a missile as Mrs. Hatch on the bosom of society is not without its charm, but the idea of being connected with the transaction is less agreeable. There are some sinister people around her.
Sinister, Lily? What do you mean?
Well, there's a lawyer who's always around. I think it was through him that Carrie knew about Mrs. Hatch. Well, he hinted to me yesterday that if I could engineer a match between Mrs. Hatch and young Bertie Van Osburgh, I should be well rewarded.
Bertie? But he's a mere boy.
Yes. He's young, rich, and credulous.
You mean this man is trying to bribe you?
That is one way of putting it. But you can understand why I can't stay on. It puts me in what your cousin calls a false position.
Oh, I'm surprised that Bertie even knows her.
Yes, I was surprised, too. But I have encountered several old acquaintances. Ned Silverton, for instance, is quite a regular visitor here. It seems that this is one of the things that young men go in for when released from the official social routine. It's the kind of previous engagement that so often causes them to disappoint the hopes of anxious hostesses.
Do you think the Miss Silvertons know anything about this?
Not for a moment. But I don't think we need worry about Ned. He's in no danger. It's on Bertie, the heir to the Van Osburgh millions, that the attention of Mrs. Hatch's group is centered.
I'll have to go to my meeting, Lily. But I've been thinking a lot about the sort of work you might do.
I feel I'd rather let Carrie down, and I don't feel I can ask her for any further suggestions. She really has tried rather hard on my account, you know.
Yes, I do know. Goodbye, dear.
I'll keep in touch.
To Gertrude's hopeful spirit, a solution to Lily's problem appeared to have been reached when she remembered how beautifully Lily could trim hats. Gertie's inspiration at once revived hopes of profitable activity. In a shop, all white panels, mirrors, and moss-green hangings, where Lily's own creations perched on their stands like birds poised for flight. Reality, however, proved to be very different.
Miss Haynes has been on the rampage all day. She hasn't had a good word for anyone. Look, here she comes.
Miss Bart, this work is quite disgraceful.
Shall I do it over again?
No, thank you. You'll only make a further mess of it.
I'm very sorry, but I'm afraid I'm not well.
If you can't sew these spangles on more regular, I guess you'd better pass the hat to Miss Kilroy. Will you finish the sewing of the spangles, Miss Kilroy?
Yes, Miss Haynes.
As for you, Miss Bart, you'd better go back to binding edges. I should have warned you there not to give me a fashionable apprentice among my work.
Miss Bart, I guess you can sew the spangles on as well as I can when you're feeling right. Miss Haynes didn't act fair to you.
Thank you, Miss Kilroy. I have a bad headache. But Miss Haynes was right. I am clumsy.
Well, it's mean work for anyone with a headache. You ought to go right home and lay down. It's nearly time anyways.
Thank you. It's kind of you. Perhaps I shall go now.
It's no good, Gertie. Miss Haynes, the foreman, is dissatisfied, and I'm not surprised. I'm really no good.
You should have done as Carrie Fisher suggested and worked in the showroom.
No, Gertie, that would have been worse. Really, it would. Too many of my old friends and acquaintances are customers at Regina's. In fact, the hat I was trimming today was for Judy Trenner.
I see.
I feel horribly tired.
I do wish you'd come and stay here and let me look after you.
It's sweet of you, Gertie, but it wouldn't work.
Why not, dear?
You do all the giving and I do all the taking.
I wouldn't mind.
I believe you, Gertie, but I would mind.
Oh.
And besides, I would shock you. No, I really must go before it gets dark.
I wish you would see a doctor.
All I need is sleep. And thanks to Mrs. Hatch, I have the means of procuring that.
But is it wise to take those things, Lily?
No, perhaps not. In fact, I have avoided using a prescription. But tonight, I may use it. Otherwise, I shall be fit for nothing tomorrow.
Oh.
Otherwise, I couldn't face Miss Haynes. And I must at least be strong enough to give him my notice.
Lily's strongest reason for leaving Gertie before a late hour was that she meant to take a copy of Mrs. Hatch's prescription to the chemist at the corner of 6th Avenue. The clerk had served her before and had pointed out that it was a queer-acting drug. The mere touch of the packet thrilled her nerves with the promise of a night's sleep. And, dizzy with relief, she stumbled against a man who put out a hand to steady her.
Good heavens. It's you, Miss Lily.
Oh, Mr. Rosedale, how strange. Forgive me, I wasn't looking where I was going.
But Miss Lily, you're not well.
It's nothing. I'm a little tired, that's all.
I'll take my arm, please.
Thank you. I'm just a little faint. Stay with me for a moment, will you?
Well, we can't stay here. The Longworth is only a few yards away. I suggest I take you there where you can rest for a while, have something to revive you.
Thank you. Yes. That would be kind.
I've joined the working classes, Mr. Rosedale.
What do you mean?
I'm learning to be a milliner. At least, trying to learn. But I'm not very successful.
But I understood. As a matter of fact, I heard you're with Norma Hatch as a secretary. May I refill your cup?
Thank you. I was with Mrs. Hatch. I left her 2 months ago.
Was it not a soft birth?
Oh, yes. Too soft, in fact. One might have sunk in too deep.
What does that mean?
You know Mrs. Hatch, I believe.
Hmm.
Well, perhaps you can understand that she might make things too easy for me.
It was no place for you, anyhow.
I left, lest it be said that I was helping Mrs. Hatch to marry Bertie Van Osburgh. I see you have heard it.
Of course, I knew he couldn't be mixed up in that. He couldn't be mixed up in that. It ain't your style.
Mrs. Hatch was really an innocent pawn in the hands of that man, Melvin Stancy, who hinted to me that I should not be the loser if the match came off.
I can quite see you had to leave.
And now I receive you, Mr. Rosedale. I've talked too much, but I do feel better.
No, please, don't go yet. Rest a little longer, please. Besides, you haven't told me what you meant when you said just now that you were learning to be a milliner.
I meant exactly what I said. I am an apprentice at Regina's.
Good Lord. You? Mrs. Fisher told me about your aunt's will, but I understood you got a legacy from her.
Yes, I got a legacy of $10,000. But the lawyers say the legacies won't be paid till next summer.
I see. Look here, you could borrow on it any time you wanted.
It wouldn't do me much good, because I owe it already.
The whole $10,000?
Every penny. Mr. Rosedale, I should like to explain something.
Please, Miss Lily, don't upset yourself.
I think Joseph Turner spoke to you once about having made some money for me in the stock market.
I remember something of the kind.
A long time ago, you referred to the fact that he had pulled off a nice little pile for me.
I had no right. It was impertinent of me.
He made about $9,000.
Please, Miss Lily, don't...
I should like to make the matter straight between us. I suppose I was naive or stupid, but I knew nothing of this work. Afterwards, I found out that what he had said he'd made for me, he had really given to me. At the time, I'd understood that he was speculating with my own money. It was meant in kindness, of course, but it was not the sort of obligation one could remain under. And as Mr. Turner is sometimes indiscreet, it is the sort of thing that's apt to be misconstrued. So, my aunt's legacy will have to go to pay for it.
It's damnable.
Not really. It's my own fault. But that's the reason why I'm trying to learn a trade.
But see here. If that's the case, it clears you out altogether?
Altogether, yes.
Oh.
And it's quite a relief to say it.
My God.
It is rather a bore.
Miss Lily, I admire pluck. And if you want any backing...
Thank you. Your tea and our talk has given me tremendous backing. I feel equal to anything now. And I stayed much longer than I meant to.
Now, wait a minute. You've got to let me walk home with you. This isn't a place, Julie. Someone told me you were living with Miss Parrish.
No, I'm boarding here. I've lived too long on my friend.
I wish you would let me help.
But you have, Mr. Rosedale. You've helped me a great deal.
You'll let me come and see you someday.
Thank you, yes. I shall be very glad.
On a day in April, Lily lingered for a moment on the corner of Fifth Avenue. The season was over in millinery, and Madame Regina had notified her that her services were no longer required. After their chance encounter, Rosedale had called to ask if she had recovered from her indisposition, and since then she had not heard from him. Tonight he was in her thoughts as she approached the dreary boarding house, so that she was scarcely surprised to find him on the doorstep. She greeted him as if she'd been expecting him, and led him into the peacock blue parlor.
Good God. You can't go on living here.
Well, I've gone over my expenses carefully, and I rather think that I shall just be able to manage it. Do sit down and try to forget the decor.
Be able to manage it? You know, that's not what I mean. It's no place for you.
It's what I mean, for I've been out of work for the past week.
Out of work? Out of work? Not a way for you to talk. The idea of your having to work, it's preposterous.
I don't see why I should be regarded as an exception.
Because you are. That's why. And your being in a place like this is a damnable outrage.
Mr. Rosedale, please. You mustn't distress yourself.
Look here, Miss Lily. I'm going to Europe next week. I'll be in Paris and London for a couple of months. And I can't leave you like this. I can't do it.
But you must, Mr. Rosedale.
I know it's none of my business. You'll let me understand that often enough. But things are obviously worse with you than they've been before. Don't you see that you must accept help from someone? You spoke to me the other day about a debt to Trenor. And I respect you for feeling as you do about it.
Mr. Rosedale, you're very kind.
Now, don't take me up until I've finished. I'll lend you the money to pay Trenor. It'll be a plain business arrangement, such as one man would make with another if that's how you want it. Now, what have you got to say against that?
Forgive me, it's not that I don't appreciate your kindness. But a business arrangement between us would be impossible, because I shall have no security to offer when my debt to Gus Trenor has been paid.
Hmm. Have you thought over what I suggested at our last meeting? Bertha Dorset didn't scruple to ruin you by an open falsehood.
I know. I have thought over what you said, but it's not possible, Mr. Rosedale. So, now we must say goodbye. I hope your time in Europe will prove interesting and profitable.
My dear, if you'd only let me, I'd set you up over them all. I'd put you where you could wipe your feet on them all.
Though Lily had rejected the idea of confronting Bertha Dorset with her letters, Rosedale's point of view gained weight as the hours passed. Her determination weakened before she fell asleep. As she sat over her morning coffee, she realized that she had unconsciously come to a final decision. Choosing a time when she knew that Mrs. Dorset would be at home, she set out with the letters in her pocket. As she turned into a side street, a vague memory stirred in her. It was down this street that she had walked with Selden that September day 2 years ago. Overwhelmed by a rush of recollection, she crossed the street and entered the house.
Do you mind my calling like this? Forgive me if it's an awkward moment.
Oh, of course not. I'm very glad. At the same time...
You are surprised.
You are always welcome. You must know that. But do come and sit by the fire.
Thank you.
I can recommend this armchair. If you let me put a cushion behind you.
People are always putting cushions behind me.
Are they? Perhaps because you look rather frail. You do look frail, Lily. Have you been ill?
I have felt rather low. When I walked past the Benedict just now, I had a vision of this quiet room with the bookshelves. Such a peaceful scene, just as it was 2 years ago.
Hmm. It was good of you to come.
I came to tell you that I was sorry for the way we parted, for what I said to you that day at Mrs. Hatch's.
I was sorry, too, that we should have parted that way. But I'm not sure that I didn't bring it on myself. Luckily, I had foreseen the risk I was taking.
So that you didn't really care?
So that I was prepared for the consequences. But we'll talk of that later.
I wanted you to know that I left Mrs. Hatch immediately after I saw you.
Yes, I know.
And that I did so because you told me to.
My dear girl, it's not necessary to explain.
But it is. You see,
Before you came to see me, I had already begun to see that it would be impossible to remain with her, for the reasons you gave me. But I wouldn't admit it. I wouldn't let you see that I understood what you meant.
Don't overwhelm me with a sense of my own officiousness.
It was not... not that I was ungrateful, but...
Oh, my dear, you're very tired. Let me make some tea.
No, I must go in a moment.
But you know how quickly I can coax the water to boil?
No, I drink too much tea. I must go. But I may not see you for a very long time. And I wanted to tell you that I have never forgotten the things you said to me at Bellamont. And sometimes they have helped me and kept me from making mistakes. Kept me from becoming what many people have thought me. These last months I have tried. Tried. No, forgive me, I'm not being very clear.
Lily, I'm grateful for what you said, but believe me, I haven't made the difference you speak of. The difference is in yourself.
Don't say that. Don't say the things you told me have made no difference. It seems to shut me out, to leave me all alone. Once, twice, you gave me the chance to escape from my life, and I refused it. Refused it because I was a coward. Afterwards, I saw my mistake. I saw I could never be happy with what had contented me before. But it was too late. You had judged me. It was too late for happiness, but not too late to be helped by the thought of what I'd missed. That's all I had lived on. Please don't take it from me now.
Lily, what do you mean? Why do you say it's too late?
Well, some women are strong enough to be good by themselves, but I need the help of your belief in me. I might have resisted a great temptation, but the little ones would have pulled me down. Do you remember, just 2 years ago, in this very room...
Oh, you have something to tell me. Do you mean to marry?
You told me I should have to come to it sooner or later.
Have you come to it now?
I shall have to come to it. But first, there is something else I must come to. There is someone I must say goodbye to first.
Don't say goodbye to me.
No, it's not you. We're sure to see each other again.
Who then? Who is it?
It's the Lily Bart you knew. I'm going to leave her here. I should like to think that she has stayed with you. Will you let her stay?
Lily, you're being fanciful.
Do you remember... you said to me once that you could help me only by loving me. Well, you did love me for a moment, and it helped me. It's always helped me.
Can't I help you? Help you now?
No, the moment's gone. I let it go. And one must go on living.
Lily, you mustn't speak in this way. No, don't pull your hand away.
I must go.
I can't let you go without knowing what you mean to do. Things may change, but they don't pass. You can never go out of my life.
No, I see that. Let's always be friends. Then I shall be safe whatever happens.
Whatever happens? What do you mean? What is going to happen?
Nothing at present. But I'm very cold. Before I go, you must make up the fire for me. Will you do that?
Yes, of course. There's plenty of wood here.
Still a little life left in the embers.
Yeah. Did you put something on the fire?
Oh, some papers I didn't want.
Well, we'll still make a good blaze.
How very pleasant it is here.
And stay a while. Why must you go? You're still pale and cold.
I might stay too long. Besides, it's late. So goodbye.
But may I not take you home?
No, I should rather say goodbye here. In this quiet room.
As Lily left Selden's flat, the sense of loneliness returned with redoubled force. She had gone to him with no definite purpose. The mere longing to see him had directed her. But the secret hope she had carried with her revealed itself suddenly in its death pang. As she walked slowly back towards her cheerless room, she was stopped by a passerby.
Excuse me. Miss Bart. It is Miss Bart, isn't it?
Yes. You must forgive me.
You won't remember me, but I'd know you anywhere. I was one of the girls in Miss Farish's club.
Yes, I do remember you.
You helped me go to the country that time I had lung trouble, and I'll never forget it. But Miss Bart, are you sick?
I'm only tired. It's nothing.
Lean on me till you feel better. Are you strong enough to walk on a little way?
Yes. I'm very glad to have seen you.
But I can't leave you like this. Tell you what, we'll get straight into a streetcar and you can come home with me while I get baby supper. I didn't tell you I had a baby, did I? I'd give anything to show it to you. And it's real warm in our kitchen. You can rest there. There, now, precious. Was it mad with Mommy for getting in supper so late? There. Are you all right, Miss Bart? We've got a parlor, too, but I guess it's warmer here. And I don't want to leave you alone while I feed her.
I much prefer to stay here, Nettie. I may call you Nettie, may I?
Of course. You must. You just don't know how grateful I am. You see, when you sent me off that time, I wasn't only sick. I was dreadfully unhappy, too.
Poor Nettie. I wish I'd known more about you at the time.
I'd known a gentleman where I was employed, and I thought we were to be married. We'd gone steady for 6 months, and he'd given me his mother's wedding ring. And I reckon he was too stylish for me. Pretty nearly killed me when he went away and left off writing. I thought it was the end of everything, and but for you, well, I guess it would have been...
No, no, Nettie. It was your own character that pulled you through.
Well, when I got back home, George came round and asked me to marry him. At first I thought I couldn't, because we'd been brought up together and he knew all about me and the baby. But then I began to see that that made it easier, because I could never have told another man, and I'd never have married without telling.
I'm glad, Nettie. I'm glad that things have turned out so well for you.
Mercy, I didn't mean to run on so about myself and you looking so fagged out. I do wish I could help.
You've helped me very much. And now I feel rested, and I must go.
You'll come back.
Yes, I'll come back. I promise.
Gertie, what a nice surprise.
Oh, it's quite a long time since I saw you.
Yes, it is a long time. I had a feeling you were avoiding me, Lily.
You're right, in a way. But I had felt that I'd become a nuisance with all my troubles.
As if I could ever think of you as a nuisance.
Well, I just didn't want to risk it.
As a matter of fact, I've just been to see Nettie Strother, and she told me that you'd been there. And she was worried because she felt you were ill. So I decided to come and look for myself.
To tell the truth, Nettie was right. I have been poorly. But seeing her did me good. I can't tell you how much she helped me. She told me about the baby and how she felt she couldn't marry George when he first asked her because he knew all about her. But his faith in her gave her the courage to go on. And now she's so happy. It's easy for a woman to become what the man she loves believes her to be. I envy her.
Yes, she's a dear girl. It's lovely to see her so happy. But, Lily, I feel worried about you. Gone so very thin.
Someone else today called me frail.
Yes, frail is a suitable word for you.
It sounds better, doesn't it? But I really feel stronger at this moment. The sight of Nettie and her story did something for me. And she seemed to think I had a hand in it.
It was your money we spent on her.
It must be one of the few times when I've put some of my own money to good use. It may not even have been my own.
Now you're talking nonsense. What have you been doing? You seemed very busy when I came in.
I've just been trying to tidy up.
Oh.
I've been so listless recently that I've become horribly careless. So now I'm putting everything in order.
I'll help you then, if I may. Oh, how lovely this dress is. It's the one you wore for the bright tableau.
Yes. How long ago that all seems.
A letter for you, Miss Bart.
Really?
Yes, the late post has just come.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Good night, miss.
Good night.
Isn't she? It's from Aunt Julia's lawyers. I wonder what's happened.
Let's hope it's good news.
It's a check. Having adjusted the business of the estate with less delay than we expected, the executors have decided to anticipate the date fixed for the payment of the bequests in the will of the late Mrs. Julia Peniston. We therefore enclose a check for $10,000. $10,000.
It will be a help, won't it?
It's strange, Gertie. When I heard the terms of Aunt Julia's will, it actually seemed to represent penury. And now that check seems almost to represent riches. So much I could do with it, Gertie. So many things that I might be tempted to do and that I must not do. The one great priority is my debt to Gus Trenor.
I don't see that you owe him anything at all after the way he treated you. I shall never forget that terrible night when you came to me. How he tricked you into believing his wife was there in the house with him.
Dear Gertie, I was naive over that whole incident. Oh. The point is, he expected a kind of payment which I misunderstood. And my one desire above all else is to get that off my mind, to have it paid in full.
You feel you mispaid all at once?
Of course, every penny. I shall never be happy otherwise. In fact, I think I shall write the check out now. If I do it while you're with me, I won't be able to weaken. I must write to the bank, too, to pay the lawyer's check in. The manager will be quite surprised to see me $10,000 in credit.
Lily, you're tired now. Why not leave it till tomorrow?
It won't take long.
All right. You do that, and I'll put away these dresses.
I suppose one of the few advantages of being poor is that it simplifies bookkeeping. I can see now at a glance what I owe. It's a pity it's too late to catch the post tonight. However, it's a new sensation to be able to write a large check and know that it'll be met. Oh, God, I'm tired.
I think you ought to get ready for bed while I fill your hot water bottle. Where is it?
It's in the bathroom. But don't bother about it.
Of course I shall. And you can be undressing meanwhile.
There's one other thing I must do. Just a brief spell of oblivion to give me strength to face tomorrow.
Oh, Lily, must you really take that?
Yes, Gertie, I must. You don't realize what it's like. I haven't closed my eyes for two whole nights. It's no wonder I look ill. Don't look so worried. It's done now. And I feel that tomorrow will not be so difficult after all.
Here is your bottle. I think that you should get into bed quickly. The warmth may help you. I'll sit with you for a while.
Don't make yourself too late. Poor Gertie. You've got to go to work in the morning.
It's all right. I shall call a hansom.
Give me your hand. Was I horrid to you?
Of course not. No, don't talk, dear. Close your eyes.
Your girls' club, Gertie. Perhaps I could help you with that.
Shh. We'll talk about that tomorrow.
Yes. Tomorrow. There was something I wanted to say today. Words that I couldn't find. Something I wanted to tell Lawrence. Lawrence.
Oh, Miss Farish, how is Miss Bart?
I think she's asleep. But I want to ask you something, Kathleen. If ever you or your mistress feel worried about her, will you get in touch with me? Here is my card. The address is on it.
I will that, miss.
Now, do you think you could call me a cab, please?
The next morning rose mild and bright, with a promise of summer in the air. The sun slanted down Lily's street, and Lawrence Selden hastened towards her door with a sense of adventure. In a violent reaction to his behavior the previous day, he had found the word that he had meant to say to her, and it seemed strange that he had let her go without being able to speak it. He ran up the steps of the boarding house and pulled the bell.
Oh, Lawrence!
Gertie, why are you here?
Come in, dear.
I don't understand.
What are all these people doing here?
Ladies and gentlemen, I should be grateful if you would return to your rooms.
For God's sake, Gertie, what has happened? Where's Lily?
The doctor will be back shortly, Miss Farish. Perhaps you would like to take your friend upstairs?
Yes. Come with me, Lawrence.
Is Lily ill? Has there been an accident? Why is the doctor coming?
There has been an accident. A serious one. You must be prepared. This is her room.
Gertie, tell me the truth quickly.
Give me your hand. There's only one way to tell it. Lily is dead.
That's impossible. How can she be dead?
Come in.
She must have taken an overdose by mistake. She has been sleeping badly for a long time. She often spoke of it to me.
You're sure? Quite sure that it was a mistake?
Oh, yes, I'm sure. Because of the way she talked to me last night.
Last night? You were with her last night?
Yes, I called in. I hadn't seen her for quite a time. Of course, you know, I worried about her.
I was worried, too. She looked so frail.
Frail? So it was you.
What was? What do you mean?
Nothing. My mind was wandering. The doctor knew her well. He knew that she would never have done such a thing deliberately. He said that sometimes people wake up and take more of the drug, forgetting how much they have had already. When he comes back, there will be certain formalities to be gone through. You will wait and see him with me, won't you?
Yes, of course.
I've asked him to give us a little time to look through her papers first. It won't take long. You will find me downstairs if you need me.
Oh, but why are you going?
Because I think you would like some moments alone with her. It's what she would have wished. Oh, there aren't many papers, and I can explain some of them if they puzzle you.
The door closed, and he stood alone with the motionless sleeper on the bed. They had never been at peace together, they two. But now he felt himself drawn downward into the mysterious depths of her tranquility. He dropped on his knees by the bed and gazed long at the face that, for the first time, neither paled nor brightened at his coming. His mind went back to that day 2 years ago when she had talked with him in his flat. She said then of Gertie, "She likes being good, and I like being happy."
Oh, Lily. Dear, dear Lily. I did love you. But could I? Could I ever have made you happy?
In The House of Mirth by Edith Wharton, Carol Molam was Lily Bard. Keith Alexander was Lawrence Selden, and June Barry was the narrator. Mrs. Peniston was Margot Lawrence, Gertie Farish was Celia Bannerman, and Gus Kenner was played by John Church. The House of Mirth was written by Edith Wharton, dramatised by Eileen Cullen, and produced by Brian Miller.